Chapter 40, Balaam Tries to Curse Israel. In preparation for the immediate invasion of Canaan, the Israelites encamped beside the Jordan above its entrance into the Dead Sea, just opposite the plain of Jericho, on the borders of Moab. The Moabites had not been molested by Israel, yet they had watched with troubled forebodings all that had taken place in the surrounding countries. The Amorites, before whom they had been forced to retreat, had been conquered by the Hebrews. The territory the Amorites had wrested from Moab was now in possession of Israel. The hosts of Bashan had yielded before the mysterious power enshrouded in the cloudy pillar, and the giant strongholds were occupied by the Hebrews. The Moabites dared not risk an attack upon them, but they determined, as Pharaoh had done, to enlist sorcery to counteract the work of God. The people of Moab were closely connected with the Midianites, and Balak, the king of Moab, secured their cooperation against Israel by the message, "Now shall this company lick up all that are round about us, as the ox licketh up the grass of the field." Balaam of Mesopotamia was reported to possess supernatural powers, and his fame had reached Moab. Accordingly, messengers were sent to secure his divinations and enchantments against Israel. The ambassadors at once set out on their long journey. Upon finding Balaam, they delivered the message of their king: "Behold, there is a people come out from Egypt, behold, they cover the face of the earth, and they abide over against me. Come now therefore, I pray thee, curse me this people, for they are too mighty for me. Peradventure, I may drive them out of the land, for I wot that he whom thou blessest is blessed, and he whom thou cursest is cursed." Balaam was once a prophet of God, but he had apostatized and given himself up to covetousness. When the messengers announced their errand, he well knew that it was his duty to refuse the rewards of Balak and dismiss the ambassadors. But he ventured to dally with temptation and urged the messengers to tarry that night, declaring that he could give no answer till he had asked counsel of the Lord. Balaam knew that his curse could not harm Israel, but his pride was flattered by the words, "He whom thou blessest is blessed, and he whom thou cursest is cursed." The bribe of costly gifts excited his covetousness, and while professing obedience to the will of God, he tried to comply with the desires of Balak. In the night the angel of God came to Balaam with the message, "Thou shalt not go with them, thou shalt not curse the people, for they are blessed." How one sin opened the door to Satan's control. In the morning, Balaam dismissed the messengers but did not tell them what the Lord had said. Angry that his visions of gain had been dispelled, he exclaimed, "Get you into your land, for the Lord refuseth to give me leave to go with you." Balaam loved the wages of unrighteousness. The sin of covetousness had made him a time server. Through this one fault Satan gained entire control of him. The tempter is ever presenting worldly gain and honor to entice men from the service of God. Thus many are induced to venture out of the path of strict integrity. One wrong step makes the next easier, and they become more and more presumptuous. They will do and dare most terrible things once they have given themselves to the control of avarice and desire for power. Many flatter themselves that they can depart from strict integrity for a time and change their course when they please. Such are entangling themselves in the snare of Satan, and it is seldom that they escape. When the messengers reported to Balak the prophet's refusal, they did not intimate that God had forbidden him. Supposing that Balaam's delay was to secure a richer reward, the king sent princes more in number and more honorable than the first with authority to concede to any terms Balaam might demand. Balak's urgent message was, "Let nothing, I pray thee, hinder thee from coming unto me, for I will promote thee unto very great honor, and I will do whatsoever thou sayest unto me. Come, curse me this people." In response, Balaam professed great conscientiousness and integrity. No amount of gold and silver could induce him to go contrary to the will of God. But he longed to comply with the king's request. Although the will of God had already been made known to him, He urged the messengers to tarry that he might further inquire of God. In the night, the Lord appeared to Balaam and said, If the men come to call thee, rise up, and go with them, but yet the word which I shall say unto thee, that shalt thou do. Thus far the Lord would permit Balaam to follow his own will, because he was determined upon it. He chose his own course and then endeavored to secure the sanction of the Lord. Thousands at the present day are pursuing a similar course. Their duty is plainly set before them in the Bible or clearly indicated by circumstances and reason. But because these evidences are contrary to their inclinations, they set them aside and presume to go to God to learn their duty. They pray long and earnestly for light. But God will not be trifled with. He often permits such persons to follow their own desires and suffer the result. My people would not hearken to my voice, so I gave them up unto their own heart's lust, and they walked in their own counsels. When one clearly sees a duty, let him not go to God with the prayer that he may be excused from performing it. A donkey sees more than a prophet. The messengers from Moab, annoyed at Balaam's delay and expecting another refusal, set out on their homeward journey without further consultation. Every excuse for complying with the request of Balak had now been removed. But Balaam was determined to secure the reward. Taking the beast upon which he was accustomed to ride, he set out and pressed eagerly forward, impatient lest he fail to gain the coveted reward. But the angel of the Lord stood in the way for an adversary against him. The animal saw the divine messenger unperceived by the man and turned aside from the highway into a field. With cruel blows, Balaam brought the beast back into the path. But again, in a narrow place shut in by walls, the angel appeared. The animal, trying to avoid the menacing figure, crushed her master's foot against the wall. Balaam knew not that God was obstructing his path. The man became exasperated, and beating the ass unmercifully, forced it to proceed. Again, in a narrow place, where there was no way to turn either to the right hand or to the left, the angel appeared, and the poor beast, trembling with terror, fell to the earth under its rider. Balaam's rage was unbounded, and with his staff he smote the animal more cruelly than before. God now opened its mouth, and by the Damas speaking with man's voice he forbade the madness of the prophet. What have I done unto thee, it said, that thou hast smitten me these three times? Furious, Balaam answered the beast as he would have addressed an intelligent being, Because thou hast mocked me, I would there were a sword in mine hand, for now would I kill thee. The eyes of Balaam were now opened, and he beheld the angel of God standing with drawn sword ready to slay him. In terror he bowed down his head, and fell flat on his face. The angel said, Behold, I went out to withstand thee, because thy way is perverse before me, and the ass saw me, and turned from me these three times, unless she had turned from me, surely now also I had slain thee, and saved her alive. Balaam owed his life to the poor animal he had treated so cruelly. The man who claimed to be a prophet of the Lord was so blinded by covetousness and ambition that he could not discern the angel of God visible to his beast. The God of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not. How many rush on in forbidden paths, transgressing the divine law, and cannot discern that God and his angels are against them. Like Balaam, they are angry at those who would prevent their ruin. A righteous man regardeth the life of his beast, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. Few realize as they should the sinfulness of abusing animals or leaving them to suffer from neglect. The animals were created to serve man, but he has no right to cause them pain by harsh treatment. He who will abuse animals because he has them in his power is both a coward and a tyrant. Many do not realize that their cruelty will ever be known, because the poor dumb animals cannot reveal it. But could the eyes of these men be opened, they would see an angel of God standing as a witness to testify against them in the courts above. A day is coming when judgment will be pronounced against those who abuse God's creatures. Balaam prevented from cursing Israel. When he beheld the messenger of God, Balaam exclaimed in terror, "I have sinned, for I knew not that thou stoodest in the way against me. Now therefore, if it displease thee, I will get me back again." The Lord suffered him to proceed on his journey, but his words would be controlled by divine power. God would give evidence to Moab that the Hebrews were under the guardianship of heaven, and this he did when he showed them how powerless Balaam was to utter a curse against them. The king of Moab, informed of the approach of Balaam, went out to receive him. When he expressed his astonishment at Balaam's delay in view of the rich rewards awaiting him, the prophet's answer was, "Have I now any power at all to say anything? The word that God putteth in my mouth, that shall I speak?" Balaam greatly regretted this restriction. He feared that his purpose could not be carried out. The king, with the chief dignitaries of the kingdom, escorted Balaam to the high places of Baal, from which he could survey the Hebrew host. How little the Israelites knew of what was taking place so near them! How little they knew of the care of God, extended over them by day and by night! Balaam had some knowledge of the sacrificial offerings of the Hebrews, and he hoped that by surpassing them in costly gifts he might ensure the accomplishment of his sinful projects. 7 altars were erected, and he offered a sacrifice upon each. He then withdrew to a high place to meet with God. With the nobles and princes of Moab, the king stood beside the sacrifice, watching for the return of the prophet. He came at last, and the people waited for the words that should paralyze forever that strange power exerted in behalf of the hated Israelites. Balaam said, "The king of Moab hath brought me from Aram, out of the mountains of the east, saying, Come, curse me Jacob, and come, defy Israel. How shall I curse, whom God hath not cursed? Who can count the dust of Jacob, and the number of the fourth part of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous, and let my last end be like his." As Balaam looked upon the encampment of Israel, he beheld with astonishment the evidence of their prosperity. They had been represented to him as a rude, disorganized multitude, infesting the country in roving bands, a pest and terror to surrounding nations. But their appearance was the reverse of all this. He saw the vast extent and perfect arrangement of their camp, everything bearing the marks of discipline and order. He was shown the favor with which God regarded Israel and their distinctive character as his chosen people. They were not to stand upon a level with other nations, but to be exalted above them all. "The people shall dwell alone, and shall not be reckoned among the nations." How strikingly was this prophecy fulfilled in the after history of Israel! Through all the years, they have remained a distinct people. Balaam sees God's favor on Israel. Balaam beheld the increase and prosperity of the true Israel of God to the close of time, the special favor of the Most High attending those who love and fear him. He saw them supported by his arm as they entered the dark valley of the shadow of death, and he beheld them coming forth from their graves, crowned with glory, honor, and immortality. He saw the redeemed rejoicing in the unfading glories of the earth made new. As he saw the crown of glory on every brow and looked forward to that endless life of happiness, he uttered the solemn prayer, "Let me die the death of the righteousness, and let my last end be like his." If Balaam had had a disposition to accept the light God had given, he would at once have severed all connection with Moab. He would have returned to God with deep repentance. But Balaam loved the wages of unrighteousness. Balak had expected a curse that would fall like a withering blight upon Israel, and he passionately exclaimed, "What hast thou done unto me? I took thee to curse mine enemies, and, behold, thou hast blessed them altogether." Balaam professed to have spoken from a conscientious regard for the will of God the words that had been forced from his lips by divine power. "Must I not take heed to speak that which the Lord hath put in my mouth?" Balak tries again. Balak decided that the imposing spectacle presented by the vast encampment of the Hebrews had so intimidated Balaam that he dared not practice his divinations against them. The king determined to take the prophet to some point where only a small part of the host might be seen. Again, 7 altars were erected, whereon were placed the same offerings as at the first. The king and his princes remained by the sacrifices, while Balaam retired to meet with God. Again, the prophet was entrusted with a divine message, which he was powerless to alter or withhold. When he appeared, the question was put to him, "What hath the Lord spoken?" The answer struck terror to the heart of king and princes. "God is not a man, that he should lie. Behold, I have received commandment to bless, and he hath blessed, and I cannot reverse it. He hath not beheld iniquity in Jacob, neither hath he seen perverseness in Israel. The Lord his God is with him, and the shout of a king is among them." The great magician had tried his power of enchantment, but while Israel was under the divine protection, no people or nation, aided by all the power of Satan, should be able to prevail against them. All the world should wonder at the marvelous work of God, that a man should be so controlled by divine power as to utter, instead of imprecations, rich and precious promises in sublime poetry. When Satan should inspire evil men to misrepresent and destroy God's people, this occurrence would strengthen their courage and faith in God. The king of Moab, disheartened and distressed, exclaimed, "Neither curse them at all, nor bless them at all." Yet he determined to make another trial. He now conducted Balaam to Mount Peor, where was a temple devoted to the licentious worship of Baal. Here the same number of sacrifices were offered. But Balaam made no pretense of sorcery. He looked abroad upon the tents of Israel, and the divine message came from his lips. "How goodly are thy tents, O Jacob, and thy tabernacles, O Israel! As the valleys are they spread forth, as gardens by the river's side, and his king shall be higher than Agag, and his kingdom shall be exalted. Blessed is he that blesseth thee, and cursed is he that curseth thee." Balaam prophesied that Israel's king would be greater than Agag. This was the name given to the kings of the Amalekites, who were at this time a very powerful nation. But Israel, if true to God, would subdue all her enemies. The king of Israel was the son of God, and his throne was one day to be established in the earth, and his power to be exalted above all earthly kingdoms. Balaam loses all he tried to gain. Balak was overwhelmed with disappointed hope, fear, and rage. He was indignant that Balaam could have given him the least encouragement of a favorable response. He regarded with scorn the prophet's compromising, deceptive course, and exclaimed fiercely, "Therefore now flee thou to thy place. I thought to promote thee unto great honor, but, lo, the Lord hath kept thee back from honor." The answer was that the king had been forewarned that Balaam could speak only the message given him from God. Before returning to his people, Balaam uttered a beautiful prophecy of the world's Redeemer and the final destruction of the enemies of God. "I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not nigh. There shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab, and destroy all the children of Sheth." He closed by predicting the complete destruction of Moab and Edom, of Amalek and the Kenites, thus leaving to the Moabitish king no ray of hope. Disappointed in his hopes of wealth and promotion, and conscious that he had incurred the displeasure of God, Balaam returned from his self-chosen mission. The controlling power of the Spirit of God left him, and his covetousness prevailed. He was ready to resort to any means to gain the reward promised by Balak. Balaam knew that the prosperity of Israel depended upon their obedience to God. There was no way to cause their overthrow but by seducing them into sin. He immediately returned to Moab and laid his plans before the king to separate the children of Israel from God by enticing them into idolatry. If they could be led to engage in the licentious worship of Baal and Ashtaroth, their omnipotent protector would become their enemy, and they would fall prey to the fierce, warlike nations around them. This plan was readily accepted by the king, and Balaam remained to assist in carrying it into effect. Balaam witnessed the success of his diabolical scheme. He saw the curse of God visited upon his people, and thousands falling under his judgments. But the divine justice that punished sin in Israel did not permit the tempters to escape. In the war of Israel against the Midianites, Balaam was slain. He had felt a presentiment that his end was near when he exclaimed, "Let me die the death of the righteous, and let my last end be like his." But he had not chosen to live the life of the righteous, his destiny was fixed with the enemies of God. The fate of Balaam was similar to that of Judas. Both men tried to unite the service of God and mammon, and met with signal failure. Balaam acknowledged the true God, Judas believed in Jesus. Balaam hoped to make the service of Jehovah the stepping stone to the acquirement of riches and worldly honor, Judas expected by his connection with Christ to secure wealth and promotion in that worldly kingdom which he believed the Messiah was about to set up. Both Balaam and Judas received great light, but a single cherished sin poisoned the entire character and caused their destruction. One cherished sin will, little by little, debase the character. The indulgence of one evil habit breaks down the defenses of the soul and opens the way for Satan to lead us astray. The only safe course is to pray, as did David, "Hold up my goings in thy paths, that my footsteps slip not."